The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And what's up, everybody? Happy Father's Day to everybody listening out there. It's 9 o'clock, and it's me, Andy Sukoff, here on Sports Talk 1240 for Hour 2. We got a good show for you tonight. Will Boer from MLB.com will be joining me in just a few minutes. And there's plenty to talk about in the baseball world. The Yankees, West Coast Horror Show, finally over. Thank God. They must be so ready to get to the airport and get the hell out of there. Because they had their road trip was just not very fluid. Their bullpen fell apart for the most part over the last six games. And they had their one bad inning complex today where Luis Cessa in the fourth inning gives up four runs, and that's all Oakland needs to win today. The Mets finally get a win against their division rival, the Washington Nationals, who are running away with the NL East, and we'll get with Will on that. But then there's so much more to talk about. And that's just here in New York. Outside of New York, you have teams that are in first place that nobody expected going into the season, like the Minnesota Twins and the Colorado Rockies, who are playing some of the best ball I've seen the Rockies play in 10 years. Not since everybody was on the Rocktoberfest train in 2007 when they went to the World Series and played the Red Sox have we seen Colorado play like that. And that was all capped off with Nolan Arenado hitting a walk-off home run for a cycle. How often do you see that? I can't say I have myself. And while we're on that, that guy at 24 years old is arguably now one of the best players in the game. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. But now I'm going to introduce from MLB.com and a Sun Devil alum like myself, Will Boer. Will, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Wish the Yankees would have taken at least one game in Oakland. I mean, the A's are not exactly a world-beating team right now.
Yeah, that's a rough six-game stretch. Obviously, going across coast is hard for any team, whether it's West Coast team going to East Coast team going to the West Coast, but still a six-game losing streak. I mean, no matter how you dice it up, it's a six-game losing streak, and no one wants that.
Yeah, you know, and this road trip for the Yankees was capped off with some really horrible pitching by their bullpen, and, you know, singling out Tyler Clippard for one, who this week just blew a couple leads, and he's been struggling since Aroldis Chapman went down. So that's not what you want to see from someone that Joe Girardi trusts in the bullpen.
No, he's been someone that teams have gone out and sought for the past couple of years. He's been someone that teams have relied on. So it is kind of weird to see him struggle, but then again, everyone goes through struggles, so you hope it's just one of those funks for him and for the rest of the team, and that hopefully in the near future, I know they got an off day tomorrow, which is really nice when you're in a funk like this and coming off a road trip, sleep in your own bed, I don't know, have a nice dinner and recharge, and then we'll see what happens when they host the Angels on Tuesday.
And while we're talking about struggling, we'll talk about someone who's not struggling right now, and that's Aaron Judge, taking the league by storm. At the top of the league in pretty much every offensive category, including the big three, average, home runs, RBIs. And this is a guy who's 25 years old and is built like a linebacker. And he's putting balls into the seats at a distance that I don't think anybody could have expected.
He's having an incredible season. I think everyone kind of knew he was good. I mean, he was a top prospect for a while, so you knew there was talent there. I think this is kind of catching a lot of people off guard. Obviously, he's not going to hit 70 home runs or whatever incredible pace he was at a little bit ago, but he's definitely sustaining it. I think the thing you want to see is in the minors, there was a little bit of concern about his strikeouts. He's done good so far, but on this recent skid that the Yankees are on, he has struck out 10 times in his past 22 at-bats. Yeah, obviously, that's an incredibly small sample size. 22 at-bats is nothing in the grand scheme of things, But as the league starts to see him, as he starts to face teams a second time, that I think is definitely something to keep an eye on with him.
And right now he's got 233 at-bats for the season. He's got 82 strikeouts, so he's striking out almost more than a third of the time that he comes to the plate. But still, and if you see somebody striking out 33% of the time, you would think his batting average would be very low, but then he's hitting .335 and an on-base percentage of .444, so because he's also drawn 44 walks, which leads the American League.
Yeah, he's shown good play discipline, like you mentioned, the walks, and I think it's interesting that he's striking out that much and hitting that well. So it's pretty much saying that when he gets the bat on the ball, he's not rolling over on pitches and grounding out. He's not popping up. Like when he hits the ball, he's getting hits. So that's obviously a good sign. But, you know, strikeouts are always something you want to avoid because they don't do anything. At least if you ground out, maybe you move a runner over or you hit the ball in the air with a sac fly, stuff like that. Especially when you get some of the exit velocities that he's getting on the ball. If you're putting the bat on the ball, things are going to happen. So that's something pretty much going forward.
And would you want to be standing in the infield when one of those 120-mile-an-hour rockets are coming at you?
I don't want to be in the infield, the outfield. I want to be, like, behind the net or in the press box.
He might break a window if he hits it up near the press box, though.
That's a fair point. Especially a lot of stadiums keep the windows open. I mean, you've got to keep your eyes open. I think the safest spot when Judge is batting might be, like, in the concession lines, but then you don't want to miss whatever he does. So, real catch-22 situation there.
Yeah. So we're talking with Will Bohr from MLB.com. Will, what teams do you generally go and cover when they send you out on assignment?
Right now, recently, I've been doing a lot of prospect stuff, and obviously, we just had the draft, so that was pretty busy. But a lot of prospect stuff. Been heading up to Vegas, catching the 51 sometime, and just seeing what's in the future.
All right, well, Las Vegas 51's obviously the AAA affiliate of the New York Mets, and some of those guys can probably help the Mets right now, who are, after finally winning a game today against the Nationals, they're still 10.5 games out of the division, and they're sitting 6 games under .500, tied with the Atlanta Braves, who I don't think many people expected them to do much. The Mets had much higher expectations, and the injury bug has just absolutely crippled them and pretty much shaken them to their core. Would calling up a guy like Ahmed Rosario now be a big help to them?
I think I was shocked. I mean, I was talking to you the other day about things we were going to talk about on the show, looked up the Mets DL, and obviously, they have a lot of players. I knew that. But just to see that they currently have 9 players on the DL, like, that's so absurd. You have a 25-man roster and 9 players hurt. It's mind-boggling. As far as Rosario is concerned, sitting .327 right now. He's everything I've seen, everyone I've talked to, he's ready. The issue is not his ability, not his skill set or anything. It's just whether the Mets want to start his clock as far as service time, whether they feel it's worth it. Is he gonna be the piece, or is he just another good piece for a team that's 6 games under .500? In which case, maybe just start it later, get him some experience at the end of the year. It kind of depends on where the Mets see themselves. If you want to go for it, I do think he can help your team. But if you think, wow, we have so many injuries, we're kind of screwed either way, and maybe you do just let him build up at bats and learn more.
And another one of the big Mets prospects in terms of hitting is Dominic Smith, a big first base prospect and likely going to be the starting first baseman next year after Lucas Duda's contract expires. From what you saw in Vegas, is he ready for the big leagues yet, or does he still have some seasoning to go?
He's close. I think a little bit of seasoning to go. He's hitting .318, which is good. And I think with him, you want to see a little bit more power, especially from the first base position. That's obviously a position that's traditionally power heavy. But what you do like is he does have a solid approach at the plate. He hits the ball all over the field. He'll go opposite field. He'll pull. He'll, you know, good gaps, a lot of doubles, stuff like that. So it's not like he's not hitting. but when you've only got 7 home runs so far, career high last year was only 14. So it would be nice to see if he adds on some more strength, but that's something that he could do in the majors, because that's just hitting the weight room and adding strength, and that's kind of body development, not necessarily a skill development thing.
All right, we're talking with Will Bohr from MLB.com. Keeping it out west, but we're going to go back to the major leagues. You know, when you and I were students at ASU, the Giants and Dodgers were the top of the division. Now we're starting to see a little bit of shift of power, where the Diamondbacks are now making their way back up, and the Colorado Rockies are sitting in first place and winning after winning another wild game today. You know, they're sitting 20 games over and 7-3 in their last 10. I think things are going pretty well in Colorado, wouldn't you say?
Arenado to walk off today, hit for the cycle too. The NL West is it's shocking to me. The Rockies are up top, Diamondbacks too, as you mentioned. I did not see that coming. That was, I think, one division. There's a couple surprises, disappointments throughout the league, obviously, but I think that one as a whole is just crazy to see the Rockies playing so well, to see the Diamondbacks playing so well, and then on the other side to see what's happened with the Giants, having them be 19 games under and 19 games back. It's crazy.
Yeah, like the top three teams in that division are the Rockies, Dodgers, and Diamondbacks. They're separated by one game, and then there's this drop-off where the San Diego Padres are in fourth place at 28-42. They're 17 games out, and, you know, I don't think they're making up that kind of gap. I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, but I think if you would have told us before the year that the Padres were struggling, no one would have been shocked.
No, not at all.
That was kind of like, yeah, they're a young team and they're usually not good. The Giants struggling, I would have been shocked. The Rockies in first place, I would have been shocked. Diamondbacks in second place, I would have been shocked. Dodgers in third, that's fine, because record-wise, they're right where you thought they would be. They're only in third because those other two teams are surprising.
And then looking at another big surprise team as we move kind of back towards the East, the Milwaukee Brewers, 5 games over .500, led by the bats of Eric Thames. And he's just been tearing the cover off the ball, especially at the beginning of the year. Then he kind of cooled off. Now he's kind of starting to get back. Are you surprised that they've been able to sustain the pace through the first 70 games of the year?
Yeah, definitely. I did not see them coming. I have some friends that are, I have a really good friend who is a Brewers fan. I'm in a group chat with him and a Giants fan, and they have bets every year, and going into the year, the Brewers fan was pretty resigned that he was going to have to buy a Giants hat. That was kind of their payoff, and now it's shocking. Now it's like, whoa, wait a minute, you might be buying a Brewers hat and wearing it to work. But they just do it for better records. So I do think the Brewers might hold on to that as far as their dumb bet's concerned. To me, in that division, it's hard to count out the Cubs. I know they're struggling. I know they're at .500 right now, but that's just such a roster.
Now, looking at the rest of that division, the Cardinals and the Pirates, it's sitting at 31-37, 31-38, respectively. I think a lot of people were, especially with the Pirates, especially expecting them to kind of make that step forward. And then once Starling Marte got suspended, it just kind of spiraled after that.
Yeah, Marte suspended, and then Younghoe Kang with the DUI. They had some weird, their season really started derailing kind of in the offseason as far as those two things are concerned, and it doesn't seem like they've been able to pick up the pace and get back on track after that, which is unfortunate, but obviously when you lose two key pieces right out of the gate, it's tough.
So do you think this is the offseason, or this is the trade deadline year that McCutchen finally gets traded? You know, he's the name that's always talked about, especially as the Pirates start to fade out, that is this the year he's traded? Is this the year that he gets sent to a contender? Is 2017 finally the year?
I do think that. I mean, they're 7 games under, unless, obviously, if they make a run or if everyone else in the division starts losing, you know, standings change, that obviously shifts everything. But I think, you know, if the trade deadline were tomorrow and they're under .500 and they're back, I think the Pirates do get rid of McCutchen and start promoting view that they have some good outfield prospects that are just kind of chilling in AAA right now. So it'll kind of be good for them. You could move on from McCutchen. You get the young guys going so that they can get a couple months of experience so you're ready for 2018. But I definitely think this could be the year that they shift that.
And one team that's kind of moving in that direction now is Chicago White Sox. So they have to trade in Chris Sale, you know, before the season. And it looks likely that they're going to trade Jose Quintana. And they've got a lot of good prospects down in the farm, including Michael Kopech and Yoan Moncada. So do you think that the White Sox start calling those guys up in the July-August range?
Yeah, definitely. Kopech's in Double A right now, so he probably got to go to Triple A first. But you could call up Reynaldo Lopez, who's one of their big prospects, Lucas Giolito, who had some time in the bigs with the Nationals last year, and then Moncada, like you said. I think Quintana goes as well, although now he's kind of struggling, 5.07 ERA this year. I think they might have missed the boat not trading him in the off season when his name was really hot. But regardless of what happens with that, I do think fairly soon, in the next couple months, you're going to see a huge youth movement in Chicago, obviously highlighted by Moncada, who everyone wants to see.
Yeah, I do think what will, even though he has struggled this year, I think what will help Quintana is that he is left-handed, and everybody and their mother wants a left-handed pitcher, because those are some of the hardest ones to find.
Yeah, you're definitely right. He's left-handed, and he has a track record, which helps. I think his stock has dropped because of this year, but it's not. There's still something there, like you said. Everyone wants a quality lefty.
And then keeping in that division, and the White Sox are still only 5.5 games out, I might add, and sitting in last place, and they're 6-4 in the last 10. You look at the rest of this division, you look at who's sitting in at the top is the Cleveland Indians, and I think a lot of people expected that. The Minnesota Twins are in second place. They're only one game over 500, and they've been struggling of late, but they're still sitting there at the top, near the top of the division, and Paul Molitor's got them going in a good direction, I think.
Yeah, they're heading in the right direction. I think they benefit, like you said, from being in that division. The Indians are only five games over 500. The whole division is separated by 5.5 games, which is crazy, but it should make for an exciting finish, and it could make it kind of difficult on some teams when it comes to the trading deadline, because when your whole division is that close, that's a really, really tough decision on whether you want to buy or sell.
And that also probably impacts, especially with that second wild card spot that's now been in effect for a few years. You know, you have much fewer teams willing to sell at the trade deadline because they think they can make that run, even if it's for that second wild card spot.
Yeah, I mean, the White Sox are 5.5 out of the division, but they're only 4 out of that second wild card spot. Obviously, they would have to jump a couple teams in their division and in the AL East, but it does complicate things because you know you can get in a wild card spot, but you also have to wonder, like, you have to see if you have an ace, because if you're the second wild card team, if you're not confident you can win a one game playoff, is it really worth it, especially if it's on the road so you don't even get that home revenue? I mean, sometimes it might not even be worth it if you know we're going to play one game, might not win it.
Yeah,
maybe it is better to sell and get ready for next year.
And then there's only two teams that are like really running away with anything, and that's the Nationals, who we spoke about earlier, and the Houston Astros, who I'm pretty sure they don't lose. Like they just like keep rolling, and it's amazing to watch them play, especially Dallas Keuchel, who after struggling so hard last year has really come back and pitching like his Cy Young self from 2015.
Yeah, hurt right now, but he has had a good year. And you're right, this Astros team, they had that huge win streak. I forgot what the number was. I know it was double digits. This team's good. Keuchel, we'll have to see what happens. Possibly a late June return from the DL. I know it was just neck discomfort, which is kind of tricky because it's not really a real diagnosis. So you don't know. You don't necessarily know how long he's going to be out, but I mean, it's not like he's a one-man show. They've obviously playing well with him, without him. I mean, they seem like the team to beat right now.
All right, we're talking with Will Bohr from MLB.com. We got a few more minutes here with you before we go on break. You know, kind of talk about like individual players. Who so far this year has been your biggest surprise player for the first half of the season?
Well, I mean, you mentioned Eric Thames earlier. That didn't see that coming. So that was obviously surprising. You've got Aaron Judge, which you knew he was good, but, you know, there's sometimes rookie struggles. You didn't think that was going to blow up as big as he did. Cody Bellinger, I wasn't sure he was going to come up because I didn't think there was room on the Dodgers roster. They had a lot of outfielders. They had A.J. Gonzalez at first base, but when you hit as well as he is, he forced his way up. So that, even his call-up was a surprise to me. And then once he came up, it's like, you know, I knew he was good, so his production is not necessarily a surprise, but the fact that he forced his way onto the roster so soon was.
And you know, and then obviously when you talk surprise, you also got to talk disappointments. You know, all those guys who you expect to have big years and just hasn't worked out thus far. You know, but there's still 90 games left for a lot of these people, so they can always turn it around. Who would be up there in that regard for you?
Young guys for me. Going into the season, I thought the Rookie of the Year, I thought Dansby Swanson and Andrew Benintendi going to have big years. Swanson's struggle has not, it's hitting a little bit of a slump. Benintendi's picked it up lately. It's hitting 271 now, so he seems to have righted the ship. But I think that those were my biggest surprises. And then, you know, as teams, you've got the Giants, a surprise we talked about, the Blue Jays, and then the Cubs. Sort of. I know they're right around 500, but expected them to be better.
Yeah, one of the players I was looking at the beginning of the year, and especially fantasy baseball certainly helps with that, was Tim Anderson from the White Sox, and I drafted him, and I was very high on him, telling a lot of people about him, and then he starts the year hitting like 140. It was that wound up kind of blowing up in my face.
Those people rubbing it in on you now, or is it?
No, because I'm not in dead last, so they don't rub it in too badly, especially because I dropped him after May 1st and picked up, I forgot who I picked up, but it kind of worked out. So
at least if you jump ship and get back on track. But then again, I'm looking at splits right now. He hit 319 in May, so.
Yeah,
maybe you messed that up a little bit.
Yeah, well, Xander Bogaerts is starting for me, so I can't really complain too much.
That's a good point. No complaints there.
Yeah, we got like another couple minutes with you before we let you go. Looking forward, what are some of the big storylines that you expect to see come up as we get closer towards the All-Star break and then the trade deadline and then into the pennant races?
Trade deadline, like we talked about, McCutchen, Quintana, where they go, what they do. I want to see if Aaron Judge can keep this up. I want to see if the Diamondbacks are for real. I think the interesting thing with the Diamondbacks, who have won 7 in a row, surprisingly, is that roster, that lineup can hit. Pitching, you've got Greinke at the top. You play in a hitter's ballpark, so you don't actually need to pitch that well. If you can hold teams to, I don't know, 4-ish runs a game, like that lineup can hit. So I think that's an interesting component with them. I want to see if Houston loses a game ever. And then I think the AL East will be interesting. And I think it's cool right now that you've got Yankees, Red Sox, 1-2. Obviously, it's always exciting. That rivalry is always exciting in general. But when both teams are good and those games mean something, it's really exciting and it's really good for the sport.
And it's absolutely a lot of fun here, especially in New York. You know, getting when the Yankees and Red Sox have those games on ESPN, like, everybody's invested in it. Especially now, football's in the off season, basketball just ended, hockey's over, and baseball is now front and center. And that's what's going to be dominating the headlines for the next 6 weeks until training camp starts. So, the Yankees and Red Sox, especially now, like you said, now they're both good. they're going to dominate the storylines, especially here on the East Coast.
Definitely, especially with the, I guess you still have the Giants, but especially with the Jets being what they are right now. We don't have to depress you before football season starts, but I do think that the Yankees and Red Sox have a chance to steal headlines, and considering the Jets season is probably going to be a disappointment, they can keep that momentum going and really, really dominate the headlines out there.
Thank you for keeping that honest and not dragging me down too far with knowing that the Jets are going to be awful, because they are, and I'll probably talk about that a little later if I can actually bring myself to say it. We're going to let you go. Will, thanks for taking the time, and I'll speak to you later.
Anytime, man.
All right. That was Will Boor from MLB.com, and again, have to thank him for not digging me too hard on the Jets, because that would just made me upset, and I really didn't want to have to be doing that, because I'm gonna have 4.5 months of absolute misery, and we'll get to that in a little bit, as we're gonna go take a break. When we come back, we'll talk some football, we'll talk some basketball, the NBA draft coming up, and the farce that is McGregor and Mayweather. We'll be right back. Sports Talk 1240.
You are listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240, WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form, and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gustbuster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit Gustbuster.com and get your Gustbuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Sports Talk 1240, Hour 2. I'm Andy Sugov, and of course we got to throw it out there to my man Brian Graves back there behind the glass making it all happen. Well, before we went to break, we kind of previewed a little bit of what, you know, there's a lot of good storylines in the sports world that came out this week, especially the one with the multi-million dollar mouth and the other multi-million dollar mouth, Conor McGregor and Floyd Mayweather, after months and months of posturing and everyone's saying it's not going to happen. They finally agreed. August 26th, in Vegas, they're going to meet up in a 12-round boxing match. And that fight is going to be a complete disaster. The only thing that's going to make that fight fun is these 2.5 months leading up to it. Because we all know that Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor love to talk. And if you want to talk to me about this, phone lines are open, 631-888-8811. Would love to hear from you and love to hear what you got to say, because that's what makes sports talk fun, when you get to talk to the people and see what they have to say and go back and forth. Before we get to that, though, Floyd Mayweather has never lost a match, and I don't think he's going to lose this one either. 2 years ago, when he and Manny Pacquiao were posturing back and forth whether that fight was ever going to happen, a lot of people were excited for it. And then they finally, I mean, you sat down and you watched it, and an absolute snooze fest. They were just ducking each other for 12 rounds, and that Manny Pacquiao got played right into Floyd Mayweather's game, because whether you like him or hate him, Floyd Mayweather is one of the best defensive counter fighters the world has ever seen. And that nobody's going to take away from. This fight is going to be completely out of Conor McGregor's element, because he's not a boxer. He's an MMA guy. He knows kicks, takedowns, submissions. That's part of his game. He can knock people out too, but Floyd Mayweather's not going to be going after him like Khabib Nurmagomedov or Eddie Alvarez did. They're not gonna go after Conor McGregor. Just because Conor McGregor is gonna sit and taunt you, that's not Nate Diaz standing in front of you. Who, if you make him angry, he's gonna come after you, or just taunt you right back. Floyd Mayweather is gonna stay back and he's gonna make you come to him. That's Floyd Mayweather's game, and I think that's going to either upset Conor, where he's gonna fall right into the trap, or they're gonna be standing there posturing at each other for 12 rounds and nothing's gonna happen. And it's going to be a colossal waste of $100+ that we're all going to sink on that pay-per-view, or, you know, the $20 cover charge at your local bar to go watch that horrific, horrific match. Of course, I could be wrong. It might wind up being the fight of the year. I don't think it will, but anything's possible. For all we know, this could be the next Thrill in Manila, or I guess the Thrill in Vegas. I guess we have 2.5 months to find out, and the things that you're going to be see slung around, and all the insults that especially Conor McGregor is going to throw out there are going to be legendary. Like when you want to talk about smart from the marketing perspective, this fight is a marketing agency's dream. You have two guys who don't know when to stop speaking and throw great barbs at other people, and you as a marketing agent or the promoter now have that chance to capitalize on that and take every bit of the best sound bites. All you need is one good thing where Conor says something about Floyd's boxing style, or Floyd Mayweather says something about Conor McGregor's family, and all hell breaks loose at the press conferences, and that goes viral. That gets shared over and over again, and there's your instant buzz. Dana White said it best. You have a lot. There's a lot there, and it's going to be a really fun lead up to when that bell finally rings to set up for that fight. Again, that's one of those things. Even though it's set officially, I'll believe it when I see it, when they're actually in the ring together. Speaking along those lines, in Vegas, the Las Vegas Golden Knights. I'm a hockey guy, so knowing that there's going to be a professional team in Vegas now, and the expansion draft is this week for them. They get to take one player from all 30 teams. So each team had to put a list of protected players out there, and then whoever else wasn't protected, the team, the Vegas Golden Knights, are allowed to select to basically put together their roster. And there are a lot of good players out there that teams are leaving available for the Golden Knights to select, including one surefire Hall of Famer in Jaromir Jagr. The Florida Panthers have left him unprotected, so he's now eligible to be picked up by Vegas, and part of me hopes he does, because he's played, it seems like, all over the league, in every conference, every division, and pretty much, I'm pretty sure he's played in all 50 states at this point, and he's one of the top players that the Panthers have left unprotected. Others include Jonathan Marchessault, who scored 30 goals this past year, and Thomas Vanek, who shootout specialist, one-time sniper. So there's a lot of good there. And keeping it local, the Rangers are probably praying that the Vegas Golden Knights go after Marc-Andre Fleury from the Penguins instead of Antti Raanta. Especially with Lundqvist getting older, they want a guy like Antti Raanta sitting there waiting as he gets, as Lundqvist gets to 35, 36. You want a guy who's under 30 and a very reasonable contract, especially with the way he played this year. You want to keep a guy like that. You'll see a lot of teams try to make trade offers with these expansion teams. Like, hey, don't pick X, and we'll give you Y draft pick, or we'll give you X player. And that's part of the business of being an expansion team. You kind of hold all the leverage, because that team left that guy unprotected, but sometimes it's only because they had to. Because they either have their franchise player at a certain position, or they have players with no move clauses that they can't leave unprotected. So there are players that they don't want to necessarily leave unprotected, but they have to meet the requirements. And teams get scared that they're going to lose these players. So they kind of work some side deals out there with the expanded team. So the expanded team can basically say, okay, well, you don't want us to take this player? That's fine. You're going to give us the next 3 years of first-round picks. And that all depends on how badly the original team wants to keep that player. If they want him that badly, they're going to pony up. And that's where George McPhee and Gerard Gallant have so much to work with here. Because they can put together a decent team and get some good players and picks out of it by other teams not wanting to lose their young stars or their role players that they've invested a lot in. It's gonna be interesting to see who the first Golden Knight roster is going to include. I'm kind of excited to watch it and see how everything kind of shakes out for them. And then that will lead up into the NHL draft, which the New Jersey Devils have the number one pick. But the draft that everybody cares about now is the NBA draft. I don't really see why. We all know that there's a few surefire point guards in this year's draft, and then after that, it's LaVar Ball. But the big news yesterday was the Boston Celtics taking that number one pick that should have belonged to the Brooklyn Nets if they hadn't completely thrown away their future to try to win that first year in Brooklyn, and taking on the contracts of Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce. And Danny Ainge has absolutely committed a highway robbery of Billy King, and now Sean Marks has to pay for all that. And, you know, with at least another 2 years of just absolute ineptitude in Brooklyn. So Boston was the number one seed, got the number one pick in the draft. Everyone is saying Markelle Fultz is the consensus number one pick. They don't really need Markelle Fultz because they have a point guard. Here come the Philadelphia 76ers. Trust the process, they say. They have Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Everybody gets hurt. So they really haven't had any chance to get a fluid unit together. They need a point guard. They come calling, and they ask the Celtics, what's it going to take to get this pick? And Danny Ainge, the master of these draft day trades and getting more first-round picks, says, all right, you're gonna give me this number three pick, and we're going to use it to take the forward that we need, and you're going to give us another first. So they're either going to get a first-round pick in next year's draft from the Lakers, which it will be theirs if the Lakers are, again, just god-awful and fall between the second and fifth pick. If they don't, then they will get the Kings pick in 2019 that the 76ers had. So good on the 76ers that they had all the assets that they could make this trade to get Markelle Fultz. But I think it's even better on Danny Ainge. All this guy does is just rack up first round picks. Brad Stevens has gotta love his GM more than, I think the only person who might like his GM more is Steve Kerr. Because his GM went out and signed Kevin Durant. He's got two rings now. Steve Kerr, I mean, not Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant's, he's still looking for that second one. I think he's still celebrating the first, which he's rightfully earned. Brad Stevens is a great young coach. He's got a great young roster. And now he's going to add the forward that he needs that's going to make his team a very, very good unit. Odds are it's probably going to be Josh Jackson. And that team, they were already the number one seed. Because the Cavaliers kind of mailed it in at the end of the season before going into the playoffs. And they got, and then the Celtics got absolutely steamrolled by the Cavaliers in the playoffs. Now you had a number three pick, and then you have more first round picks coming to you. This team is going to get scary really fast, and that's coming at a time where LeBron James is just getting older. The Celtics are going to be a team to watch out for, as can be the Philadelphia 76ers if everybody stays healthy. That's the big issue. If the 76ers can stay healthy, maybe they can win 35 games this year. And then that's the way to move up and up and up. We'll have to see what happens there. And then there's the Knicks. Oh, where do you begin with them? I don't know. They need a point guard. But, of course, because they won some meaningless games at the end of the year, you know, like most New York teams do when their draft position is impacted by that. I'm looking at you, New York Jets. They fell from potentially being in the top five to getting the number eight pick. And don't get me wrong, the eighth pick is not a bad pick to get. You're still going to get a very good impact player. But you likely lose out on the top point guards like Markelle Fultz. And whether you want to believe he's a top player or not, Lonzo Ball and De'Aaron Fox. But maybe they get a Malik Monk at number eight. Maybe he falls to them. And Malik Monk is somebody who can help them immediately. Or maybe they take a chance on the French point guard. Ooh, he believes he's perfect for Phil Jackson triangle. Honestly, I think the triangle kind of needs to go. It's an antiquated system. Most teams played run and gun, where the triangle is a lot of ball movement, and that's not conducive for today's NBA. Because the triangle is really committed to having a point guard who can move the ball, which the Knicks don't have. And on top of that, you need to have some really unselfish players, which the Knicks also don't have. You have an egotist in Carmelo Anthony who thinks he's still an elite scorer despite the fact that his knees are going to tell him otherwise, his age is going to tell him otherwise, and Kristaps Porzingis should be telling him otherwise, because that team should be Kristaps Porzingis' team now, not Carmelo Anthony's. But maybe drafting a guy like Malik Monk will kind of give Melo the message that, hey, we're trying to get you out of here. That's got to be what the Knicks need to do. They need to either draft a point guard, if they can get one, or find that person who's going to succeed Carmelo Anthony and can lead the Knicks into a new era of what they hope will be competitive basketball. I'm not a Knicks fan. I will tell you that right now. I don't like the Knicks. When they, watching them lose 50 games every year is actually kind of been fun. But that being said, if they can finally get it together and become a competitive team again like they were about 6 years ago, that the Knicks games are going to be the hottest ticket in New York. Nobody will be able to get them. And, Jim Dolan just wants that. He craves that because the Knicks are his baby. He wants to show it off. And right now, he can't because they're just not good. And that's partially a knock on him. It's partially a knock on Phil Jackson and a knock on the coaching staff. And really everybody that's involved with the Knicks organization, they just cannot get out of their own way. But that's neither here nor there. Both New York basketball teams are just in kind of a really bad state at this point. And they need major overhauls to finally get themselves back on track. The Nets are trying to get there. The Knicks are obviously closer, but that in this NBA platform, it really doesn't matter because we know that the Warriors and Cavs are probably going to wind up playing in the finals again. You heard it here first, although I'm sure ESPN probably said it after the Warriors took game to game five, and it just kind of, I think everybody knows that that's going to probably happen again. And looking at other teams in the NBA, you have the Spurs, who might be the Warriors' biggest threat in the West. We already talked about the Celtics. And a team that is now going to be probably in maybe a little bit of panic mode would have to be the Indiana Pacers. Paul George probably did one of the worst things that he could do for that team. He told them outright and said to them, "I am not coming back after next season," which he has every right to do. But he just basically cost the Pacers any chance of trading him during the season, or at least getting anything of value for him. By Paul George saying, "I'm not coming back at the end of the after the end of the season," what incentive does any team have to make a trade for him? Unless they're just giving up a second round pick and maybe some cash considerations. I wouldn't give up anything of value for Paul George, especially knowing that he doesn't. There's also no guarantee he's going to sign with my team. You might have a better shot. You might want to then take that chance of trying to sign him in free agency and just waiting until the end of the season and getting him then. It's been known that he wants to go play for the Lakers. So especially if you're the Lakers, you don't have to make any kind of trade for him for anything of value. And other teams are now likely going to be scared off by the fact that they know he wants to play for the Lakers. So great news for the Lakers. Bad news for everybody else that Paul George has now given his 1-year notice to the Indiana Pacers. I would have waited until, later on, but that's just me. I'm not an agent. I'm guessing his agent told him and advised him that that was the right move. So we'll see how that works out for him. I did promise I was going to talk about the Jets for a little bit. We got about 10 minutes left here. Oh God. I was hoping I wouldn't have to, but football is a 24/7 sport now. Football will dominate the headlines for the foreseeable future. And unfortunately, the Jets are going to have a lot of bad headlines this year. This team will probably be historically bad. There's no quarterback of any kind of merit. Josh McCown is a journeyman quarterback for a reason. He's played all over the league for a very good reason. He's not that good. He's good enough to get you through a couple games. Nobody's going to take that away from him. He's a professional quarterback. But nobody's going to be confusing him with Peyton Manning. Nobody's going to be confusing him with Aaron Rodgers. He's now in his late 30s, and he's been in the league for a good while. He's been in the league since 2002, so he's been in the league for 15 years. And he's played for Arizona, Detroit, Oakland, Carolina, Chicago, Tampa, and Cleveland. He's played for 7 teams in 15 years. The longest he's spent with any team is 4 years. That was when he first came up with Arizona. Every year that he's played, he's only started 10 games twice in a season. In 2004 with the Cardinals and 2014 with Tampa. Other than that, it's been 2 games, 8 games, 9 games, 2 games, 9 games, 2, 1, 3. He didn't play at all in 2012 and he didn't see any time. 8 games, 11 games in 2014, 8 games in 2015, and for a terrible Cleveland Browns team, played 5 games. He's got a career record of 18-42. And this is the guy the Jets think can play quarterback for them? I don't agree. But again, this is why I'm not a general manager. Then they got their draft picks, Bryce Petty and Christian Hackenberg. Petty finally got to see the field last year. After missing his first season injury, he finally got to see the field after the Jets kind of realized that all was lost last year. Didn't really do anything to impress anybody. especially, you know, in that game against Miami, where he just got absolutely rocked, and Fitzpatrick had to come back in, and Christian Hackenberg didn't see a snap after week four of the preseason. So last year was kind of like a wash for him. And this is that Christian Hackenberg is a guy they use a second round pick on. Most teams, their second round picks play. I'm not saying that Christian Hackenberg shouldn't have started in week one, especially after they re-signed Ryan Fitzpatrick. But when things started to go south, and they went south pretty quickly last year, I think we can all agree on that. Hackenberg should have at least had a few reps in game, especially in some of those blowouts that they had last year. There's no reason that Hackenberg shouldn't have been playing. You think that by him getting sacked a few times and throwing a bunch of interceptions is going to mess with his confidence? Well, that's going to mess with your confidence. You shouldn't be a quarterback in the NFL. If you can't handle that kind of pressure, you should not be in the league. And again, I obviously can't say that from experience. I'm not a quarterback. I did not play in the NFL. Maybe it's a completely different psychological thing. But there's a team playing in that has at one Jets drive in Florham Park, New Jersey, that has no identity. There's nothing there. For years, the Jets have been a defensive team when they had young Darrell Revis, Revis Island, Muhammad Wilkerson, Sheldon Richardson, and a strong defensive line and big linebackers. Now, last year they got burned up and down the field. Their defensive line couldn't get to anybody. And Darrell Revis has been let go. David Harris has been let go. The heart and soul of that defense. And that defense has no identity. That's gonna be left to the rookies to follow Muhammad Wilkerson and Leonard Williams' lead to kind of reestablish what they had. And the offense is just a completely rudderless ship. No quarterback, no offensive line, no wide receivers, no tight ends. They have a running back and a half, which is awesome because, are you going to run the ball 65 times a game? I don't think so. So, and they also have no kicker. They let go of their best player from last year, Nick Folk. When you're letting go of a kicker for salary cap reasons, I things are just not going to be good this year. I got a friend of mine who lives in Buffalo, and he says, "Hey, you need to come up to Buffalo for week one when the Jets play the Bills." I'm not so sure I want to go. I don't know if I can actually bring myself to wear a Jets jersey in Buffalo, where, as bad as they are, I'm going to get laughed out of the building. And there will be a decent amount of Jets fans there too, and we will all get laughed at as we walk out of the building after a 31-3 loss. No matter how bad the Bills are and may be, the Jets are just going to be that much worse this year. It's going to be an utter disaster, and I'm looking forward to it just because I'm a Jets fan and I don't know any better. But going on to some better things that are going to go on this week, so I can forget about the fact that the Jets season has to happen this year. At Madison Square Garden this Saturday night, Bellator 180, where you're going to have Chael Sonnen versus Wanderlei Silva, Matt Mitrione against one of the greatest MMA fighters of all time, Fedor Emelianenko, Ryan Bader making his Bellator debut against Phil Davis for the light heavyweight title, and WGBB is going to have your coverage from Bellator 180. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy_Sukhov and go to my YouTube page, which is just my name, and I will have the videos from the press conferences, weigh-ins, post-fight interviews, press conference after the fight. So you're not going to want to miss that, because it's going to be that could be one of the best fight cards of the year. And it's there. It's Bellator's first event at Madison Square Garden, and so that's a big deal for them. That does it for me. Make sure that you go and check all that out. I just want to thank Will Bohr for joining me tonight. Obviously, Brian Gray's in the back. Stay cool, everybody. We'll be right back.
the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.